This is our last talk of the symposium, and of course we're going to end with the grand slam of Suzanne Patburn. Yay! We're looking forward to this. And so Suzanne studied literary criticism, art history, and cultural studies in, oh, I knew I'm going to mispronounce this, Tübingen, Germany, and Vienna. I can do that one. And I think it shows, actually, that she studied those subjects, because she's really an incredible powerhouse of information on art and literature. And she's been the owner of Galerie Druk et Buch since 1994, and first in
Tübingen
and next in Vienna. The gallery next door to the The gallery next door to the Freud Museum in Vienna specializes in international contemporary book arts. It puts on 4 to 6 shows a year, and if anybody's friends with Suzanne on Facebook, we get to actually see those exhibits a little bit. And she acts as the exhibition curator. Most recently, for the traveling exhibition Freud on the Couch, Psyche in the Book, which opened in 2018 at the Center for the Book Arts in New York City, the Minnesota Center for the Book Arts in Minneapolis, and the San Francisco Center for the Book, which I think some, you know, of the Californians, a lot of us have seen that show. She gives lectures, does guest teaching, and writes catalog contributions. I'll give you Suzanne.
Here we go. The title of my speech is, of course, Here and There is Everywhere. First of all, I would like to thank you, Susan, and Peter, who isn't here, as well as the entire Codex Committee, for having invited me to give this speech. It is a great honor and fun to be here. And it's also a wonderful opportunity for me, as an art book dealer in Europe, who has also for many years been dealing in the United States, to talk about my experiences. I would like to tell you about some of those things I have observed regarding artist books collecting, as well as about different topics and aesthetics appeared to me I have encountered in artist books both here and there. Although I'm trained artist, art historian for 25 years now, I have owned Galerie Druk und Buch, a gallery specializing in contemporary artist books. My gallery, as Susan mentioned, is currently on the Berggasse in Vienna, next door to a famous address, the apartment building of Sigmund Freud, where he found his psychoanalysis, which gives close to your speech. I also often curate exhibitions, not only in Europe, but also in the United States. Most recently, a show that was at the Center for Book Arts, as you mentioned, here in San Francisco, in Minnesota, and in New York City. The show was called Psyche in the Book, Freud on the Couch, and with its 50 books by artists from both countries, both the United States and Europe, it was a particularly good representation of what kind of work I'm interested in, and in with such a neighbor, what kinds of things it is unavoidable in Vienna to think about. This talk, however, will be based on thoughts I have had while traveling for business, while wheeling and dealing, so to speak, trips to collections, collectors, and artists. But I had not only been busy buying and selling, I have also been noticing things, searching and exploring, categorizing and accumulating ideas. In addition to discussing books, seeing the aesthetics and artistic value of the books themselves, I have naturally also encountered the various reasons people have for collecting contemporary artist books and the criteria that guide them. These often result in a different kind of response to artist books than what might expect. When I first discussed this keynote speech with Peter, We agreed that I should talk about the main differences between Europe and the United States. A huge topic, for 40 minutes. Too big for one speech. I am very happy to do so, since by now I travel about the same amount on both continents. But I do know that there are plenty of pitfalls in such a comparison. The pitfalls of generalization, of subjective interests and reflections, of presumptuousness, or of simply still not having seen enough. So I would ask you kindly to consider my talk as that of a European dealer in the United States and how she sees the art book world. Of course, for every generalization, there is at least one counterexample. Nonetheless, I would still dare to tell you what I have observed, despite the fact that I'm quite sure there will be a number of observations you disagree with. In the following, I would like to address three main topics. First, approaches toward collecting artist books and their consequences. Second, mission, that is the contents of artist books versus their aesthetics, and the book as a monument, credits to Ruth Rogers for non-written text. Welcome. And third, is this German? Reflections on form. Let me begin with an anecdote, or better with two. A private collector in Switzerland, who owns a remarkable book collection but has no descendants or heirs, wanted to give her quite extensive collection to a famous German museum. The collection was perfect addition to the types of books already held in that museum, and so the two parties quickly agreed that it was a good plan. A contract was drawn up by the museum's director. Everything was fine until the collector, when she was about to sign the contract, read the last sentence. The last sentence stipulated that she, the private collector, was no longer allowed to exhibit her books. But worse, she would no longer even be allowed to touch her books, for conservation reasons, of course. You can imagine the rules of these contracts had changed the state of affairs radically. The private collector's passion had turned into the museum's director's responsibility for preservation. A collection under lock and key, with no one able to see it, no one able to use it. A collection no longer touched by anyone, but a collection for eternity. As you can imagine, she didn't sign the contract. And in fact, the collector is still alive and well and enjoys a life surrounded by her books she may touch. The second anecdote concerns a visit I once made to an artist book collection at an American academic institution. I was visiting the college's collection for the very first time, as usual, with my suitcases full of books. The librarian explained the basic rules for his collection, that they could not purchase delicate book objects that need to be handled carefully or with assistance, that any book they bought for the collection had to be robust enough to let the student see it without supervision, that it had to be self-explanatory, and so on. I then showed the librarian a wide range of books, and in the end he decided to buy the most fragile object I was carrying. La Carte d'Identité by Patricia Meinert. He said, I was astonished, of course. He said, I know this book won't last very long in our collection, but I also know that our students will love it, that it will inspire them. Thematically, it has a lot to do with where they are at right now, namely reflections on the body and the vulnerabilities. That's why it's the one I choose, even though I know it might not last more than 2 or 3 years. Eventually, we'll have to throw it away then. But a lot of our students will have been inspired. Of course, I don't mean to say that American librarians handle artist books irresponsibly in an archival sense, and I certainly will not name any names. And of course, it is unfair to compare a private collection to a museum's collection to an academic collection. But these two extreme stories do reveal a major difference and the collecting policies in Europe and the United States. Oops. In Europe, collecting tends to be done with the notion of eternity, of archiving, conserving, and hiding things away, unseen except in few exhibitions, or by even fewer special appointments. In the United States, there are artist books in many college and university collections, and so artist books are not only used much more for teaching, they are also established artistic form and visual way of thinking. This is an aspect that can only be found sporadically here and there in Europe, although fortunately it is gradually becoming more common. Personally, at my gallery in Vienna, which you see here, I know of a thematic tours for groups on advance notice. I'm amazed to see at their popularity as well as how necessary they seem to be. Thus, in the United States, there are more directly accessible public collections. In Europe, only a few unusual university library collections have artist books, and there are also very few museums with book art collections, the rare examples being the Klingspor Museum in Offenbach, the Museum of Applied Art in Hamburg or in Frankfurt or in Vienna, and the wonderful Museum van het Boek and the Van Abbe Museum in the Netherlands. Most artist books are in libraries, especially in the state and national libraries all over Europe. In Germany, for example, there are artist books in the collections of the Bavarian State Library, the Herzog August Bibliothek, Herzog August Library in Wolfenbüttel and the Anna Amalia Library in Weimar. And as a brief aside, I would venture to say that their budgets seem to be far lower than the budgets of most colleges here. And there is something else that should not be underestimated as a defining feature in these European collections. These collections are very often quite formal in nature. That is, they are restrictive and much more directly content-related than here. For example, collections of literature collect artist books with literary references. National or state libraries collect books that have to do with their country or state. Curators of entirely independent collections who buy books for reasons based purely on their quality or outstanding originality are quite rare. That is privilege reserved for the very few private collectors. I would like to just digress briefly here with a few words about artist books in Eastern Europe. When I moved to Vienna a few years ago, I decided to explore the Eastern European artist book scene in the nearby countries of Czech Republic, Slovakia, or Hungary. This, for example, is an artist book, a unique one, which is in the meantime at Jack Ginsburg collection, where you see this children's game where the lines are replaced by little chains, so that especially on the left image you see the lines of the border of Hungary, which could be enlarged or not, which is, I think, in a fascist country, quite a topic. But on the other hand, it couldn't be censored because it's just a game, you know, and I love this. And also, above all, the various countries of former Yugoslavia. You see here, it's an artist's newsletter from the time where on Balkan the Yugoslavian war was, and where Yugoslavia was falling apart or being cut apart, or however you want to tell that. And this was not an artist book, but a pamphlet, where all the theories and things were inside, the design, the art, the theories, the politics, the literature, and so on and so on. It was not easy proposition, not only to find things in the Eastern Europe was not easy, not because of only language reasons, but also because there are hardly any galleries or bookstores dealing with artist books. Nonetheless, it was quickly apparent that in these countries, Eastern Europe, there are significantly more politically artist books, and that the artist book was and still is used as a medium for political resistance just as it was in former East Germany or in Russia, the so-called Samizdat books. Now as then, artist books are not marketed objects, as it is here. Their distribution is based on barter or exhibition or presentation evenings. They are not even potentially a commodity. Still, they are clearly an important political and conceptual medium. But to discuss this is more detail, in more detail, it would need to give a second talk. But I could not skip this. So I will return to Western Europe. In Germany, and I'm using Germany as an example for Western Europe, the artistic and creative form of an artist book is, at best, instructed through all the techniques needed to construct them. Artist books are not taught as if they were their own medium, in the way I have seen it at many universities in the United States, and also how artist books are handled at institutions like the Metropolitan Museum or the New York Public Library. The concept of the artist book as an independent medium is growing only very gradually in Europe. Although the German National Library is becoming more active, and there are other collections and libraries, if approached, that have become more open to the idea of the collection of artist books as art, and in and of itself, in my opinion, these steps are still in their infancy. There is another point connected to this. Collecting, as I have described it, happening in Germany, as well as keeping collections under wraps, certainly has repercussions on artistic production. If the market for artist books is small, is their production then slower, more careful, or more weak-willed? It is a conclusion that is certainly not completely correct, but nonetheless, I'm sure many people in this audience know how financial constraints or cumbersome pre-financing of editions can mean, regardless of how active artists and how interested collectors may be. But there's another related question. Does this attitude toward collecting influence content? And this brings me to my second point. Mission, content versus aesthetics, or the book as a monument. Until only a few years ago, as I have observed, political issues were hard to find in artist books from Western Europe. That was in strong contrast to the US East Coast. In general, one might say book artists in the United States, as well as Eastern Europe, are more concerned with current events and politics, whereas the approach of book artists in Western Europe is more aesthetic and in structures. But now I would like to show you an exceptional project, one that is very unusual, at least as far as artist books in Western Europe are concerned. It is a project that combines both of the above aspects, the political and the aesthetic structural ideas. Indeed, Here and There is Everywhere is not just the title of this talk, but it also my guiding thought, especially here. This is the anchor book project of Ulrich Wagner. Imagine 75 different triangular books, each one of a kind. The length of each side is about 19 inches, and they have 9 different basic colors. They are made of handmade cotton paper, and you can leaf through them like any book, the only difference being that they have an unusual shape. They are triangular. Joachim Gall, a German writer who worked a lot about Ulrich Wagner's work, said, "The triangle has played an important role in Ulrich Wagner's system of symbols since the 1990s. In this project, however, it has taken on a whole new dimension. The triangle has become the shape of his image career. That is rather unusual, particularly when the format is a book. By relating the shape with the contents, the medium with the signs, the result is a surprising means of perception. What is important here is not the progression of a series of letters, but the progression of a group of geometric shapes, although the whole image is not visible when turning the pages. Only parts of the individual shapes can be seen, shapes that Wagner has assembled, as he often does, as grids. But they can also be completely unfolded by means of a sophisticated folding technique, to a size of about 75 inches square. A guiding principle here could be Fridtjof Capra's idea that the whole is always different from the mere sum of its parts. Each book is made with schematic patterns in different colors, done in paper pulp painting, patterns that seem like structures. Something about these patterns is strangely beautiful. They evoke a special frame of reference, the fact that each book was created as a single sheet of handmade cotton paper is only a technical detail, but let me show you here a photo of the huge wire sleeve papermaking mold, which is how this work is made. Gall again. These overlapping shapes run through each book as part of such an overall grid, something like an imaginary blueprint, a blueprint that can only be seen when the book is completely open and unfolded. Wagner's basis for his new work is the triangle, with its similar geometric beauty, is related to an old theme, the question of how a shape becomes a symbol. He is working with the idea of how a graphic shape, in extreme cases, one that is even considered beautiful, if used in a particular way or in a specific context, can suddenly jerk the viewer out of pleasant and quiet contemplation and cause an immense association. But neither the color, nor the printed patterns, nor the form have been chosen random. Reproduced on these 75 unique books are different floor plans of main buildings of the Nazi concentration camps, the central sites of the Nazi system of destruction. In some or in a group, they form a kind of bulwark of memory. But of course, each one can also stand alone as a representative memorial. What is important here is not the progression of a series of letters. The overlapping shapes run through each book as part of such an overall grid. Another hidden association is related to the basic colors and the shape of these books. Together they have to do with the identity badges that camp inmates had to wear. But that is not the focal point of these books, and that is exactly where the strength of the work lies. The fact that he is able to maintain an uncertain balance between concrete perception of form, fragmentary ambiguousness, and a distinct and unmistakable meaning. A tension arises between, on one hand, the beauty of the geometric form, the book's composition and craftsmanship, and on the other, the underlying subject of the strategically planned horror of the camps. If you know how triangles were used in the concentration camps, political inmates, for instance, had to wear a red triangle, their cloth, immigrants, a blue one, then the books become disturbing. Of course, Jewish people had to wear the yellow one. These are the most common colors. And these marking enemies, I think that's something we all should keep in mind. Wagner lifts the formal aspect of an elaborately constructed, high-quality book with its signs and marks on handmade paper, and lets something else flash behind it. Once you realize what this is, this other aspect of the book becomes a companion you can no longer shake off. The systematic killing of the Nazis is expressed by blue, green, purple, yellow, pink, brown, and black triangles. The usual symbolic association we have for these colors become tragic symbols of the Nazi terror. Moreover, Ulrich Wagner books from pure equilateral triangles. While these triangles become an identity marker, they also remain a simple shape. The outwardly unchanged shape has become charged with meaning, although nothing is explicitly explained. Did we have that? No. Sorry. There's something mixed in. No. Hidden knowledge, becoming the viewer's quiet yet disturbing companion, is a central aspect of Ulrich Wagner's work and gives it strength. When looking at his books, you are not interrupted. There are no shouted messages in them. He doesn't make any declarations, and yet he is not just playing with a shape. It is precisely for this reason that his concept is artistically convincing, both as a book and as a work of art. With this book project, Wagner has set out onto artistically daring terrain. While circumventing the precipices of political and pedagogical messages, he achieves a sovereign artistic language. He creates meaning through the perception of structures, and yet without preaching, it is a rare case of exemplary and successful handling of subject, expression, and material. When reflecting on this book project, Ruth Rogers came up with this idea, I'm quoting her, of the book as a monument. Yes, I agree, and this is a good way to describe Wagner's project. This beauty, the beauty of these books, both in their material aspect and in their level of abstraction, undermines the defensive attitude one assumes as a protection from the idea of the horror they represent. And as we all know, fascism is possible everywhere and anytime. The kind of beauty of the book, the material as well as the level of abstraction, undermines the defense attitude one put up against the horror, as well as the images of this incredible horror. I've now reached my third part of my talk, having, as announced at the beginning, spoken about collecting and the various forms it can take, and about the artist book as a medium, including a political one, using as an example a work that can be read as a warning, as a series of books I would describe as a monument. My third and final point is an idea that has grown out of observations I have made over a long period of time. I would like to discuss a quality that seems, at least to me, characteristic of German artist books, although I would not be at all unhappy if I were proven wrong that this is specifically German, since for me personally, it is the quality of artist books in general. Allow me to go back a bit. When I saw Ken Botnick's Diderot project for the very first time here at Codex 4 years ago, my spontaneous reaction was to ask him, "Are you sure you are not German?" Luckily, my question didn't upset him. But even I was surprised by my reaction. I kept asking myself, "What did I say that? Why German?" Of course, his focus on the Enlightenment was one reason, but it also had to do with the precision, the complexity of his, and the reflection on books, and the fact that they also capture the process of bookmaking itself. Am I a victim of stereotypes or clichés? Are the differences between Western Europe and the United States book art in the aesthetics as well as in the form and in the reflection of the form? It seems to me that the quality I was reacting to was the reflection on the form of the book, in the book itself. For me, this kind of formal self-referentiality is a quality of book art per se. And it is also quality in the work of many German or Western European book artists, from my point of view. When presenting current German artist books in the United States, I often get a similar response. Collectors call them sophisticated or precise. They are described as having a special aesthetics or dynamic form, and so on. The fact that the form is not merely a decorative aspect, but is related to the contents of the book, is an essential quality for me. Now, I'm not sure if this is something specifically German. It may simply have to do with which books I have selected as examples. In fact, I would be very happy if you would challenge this idea of mine and show me some other books that display the same kind of reference. But before I get even more abstract and theoretical, let me show you a series of examples of the kind of German artist books I'm talking about. You might already know them, or have seen them, or see them here around at Codex. There's, of course, Veronika Schäfer's, very well known for good reason, especially for her good books. She combines Japanese and American materials and German materials and techniques in very innovative ways. These materials and techniques are never just decorative, they are always related to the subject at hand. They are part of the book's concept. Here is Hochhaus, Skyscraper, which deals with the retirement benefit fraud, something that has lately been an issue in Japanese society. Crime scene tape is used as a sign of the stigmatization that wrongdoers face, visually presenting the fundamental concept of the book with its several chapters. Perhaps Veronika's most famous book, next to the so-called squid book, is Lob des Typhoons, In Praise of the Typhoon, a book that is very playful while nonetheless complex. The manifold duplicity of this book's language, form, location, and content is fashioned like a Jacob's ladder, the child's folk toy that seems to open and fold in perpetual motion. Another artist who always stretches the idea of what a book is and who reflects on its form is Anja Harms. In Singendes Blau, Singing Blue, she neutralizes the form of a book by doubling it. There is a small codex of images in the center, surrounded by a larger format one. The larger book is printed with a poem by Hans Arp. This allows the reader to choose their own combination of text and image on each page, which lets them escape the control of a linear series of normal pages. Here in Feuernetze, huge book, Fire Mesh, a book created by Anja Harms in cooperation with Eberhard Müller-Fries, who is a sculptor, the cover is made by burnt wood in the form of a mesh, reflecting the title as well as the subject of most of the poems by Paul Celan inside the book. Many of the prints inside the book are also the same meshwork. A third book by Anja Harms, Nichts, Nothing Blown Away, is based on an old Chinese poem. It is not only embedded in acrylic frame and held together by sticks, it is a circular concertina book that doesn't have a beginning or an end. Patricia Meinert is a student of the only professor for book arts we have in Germany, Sabine Golde. You, of course, know her, she's here. Meinert in Halle an der Saale, Burg Liebichenstein. Patricia Meinert always works in a very abstract and, of course, beautiful way. Here in Simultaneite, Simultaneous, you always see the same circle, no matter how many pages you turn. It is a book, an image, and a dynamic form that seem to be frozen, referring absolutely to the title and the idea. Yvonne Young, a very young Korean woman who also studied in Germany, also in Halle, has just won a major prize for book art from the famous Herzog August Bibliothek in Wolfenbüttel. She works with various forms in a very tangible way. Growing is the title of the poem in this book, as well as the book itself. And indeed, it moves and seems to grow and raise and so on. Stefan Gunisch, another guy of Halle, expands on the form of the book, using in particular the model of the concertina pamphlet in very clever ways. Dazwischen, in between, has to do with its childhood memories. And the front page, so you see on the image on the left, you see the back side of the book. And you can imagine that there are all these little pamphlets inside, and if you flatten it out from the inside, it adds up to a big family photo. The German artist Daniela Deeg together with the American artist Cynthia Lawless, create one book a year together as Till. The book Risk, which is layers, its layers and layers of prints and different papers, deals with life in the world's two most famous gambler cities, Baden-Baden and Las Vegas, and and is printed with these shining colors so that things come out like a gambling machine in a way. Visually come out, not literally. And last but not least, I would like to show you two books by Yasutoma Ota, a young Japanese artist who also studied in Halle after having studied in Japan and now is back in Japan. His skills are outstanding, as is his sensitivity for materials and concepts. My first example here of his work is The Book of Tea, which is in the form of a tea bag, and it has images printed with tea. And the text is in German, English, and Japanese, with the typography representing the Japanese concept of room proportions, based on the notion of the idea tea, a room, the deep content of the text. And here is the Lemon Book, which is one of Ota's series of three food books. Here, the eponymous form, the lemon, is printed as text lines on the edges of the pages, while the pages themselves have images of the sliced lemon, the page in the same thickness of the lemon slices. It is a subtle balance of form and content, a game that plays with the idea of inside and outside. Ending with a lemon? Yes, as my attitude is, if life gives you a lemon, you should create an artist book here, there, and everywhere. Thank you.